This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:35. You're listening to the evening edition with Kelvin and Lynn. Lynn, Keith Kam is in the studios with us for the market wrap. E-wallets and cryptocurrencies are in the limelight today in Parliament. What are the concerns raised?
That's 2 days in a row you've messed up names, Kelvin.
Please. Keith Kam.
don't call me out like this. It's inappropriate.
So anyway, yeah, you're right. Some data that was revealed today showed that there were more than 25 million mobile payment transactions in the first quarter of this year. The value transacted was 725.8 million ringgit. So this indicates that this trend is certainly not going away, and with more and more of us opting for a lighter, thinner wallet slash handbag, there may be some concerns that we need to consider. So I spoke with Vincent Fong. He's the chief editor of FinTech News Malaysia. He believes that there is little risk in adopting an e-wallet lifestyle, but interestingly, it's also how people who think cash is king might actually find themselves on the sidelines.
I believe the risk is quite minimal since it's a space that's regulated by Bank Negara. So if there are any disputes, there are always redress mechanisms in place. In fact, Touch & Go even went a step further to ensure that you get your money back in 5 days if it's an unauthorized transaction. The only risk that I see in the rise of e-wallets is the possibility of the choice being removed from consumers who don't necessarily want to opt in into the notion of a cashless society. I think in some parts of the United States, we are already observing some states making it illegal for shops to refuse cash payments.
You know, it's interesting because in this push to become cashless also, I guess tourists might find some difficulty if the place they're visiting no longer accepts cash widely. Also, I would say people of a certain age who are not used to using mobile transactions, when they go and they want to opt for paying cash, and suddenly the cashier tells them we only accept QR pay, for example. And then there's also a section of the population who are unbanked, who don't even believe in the banking system completely.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be a few pain points, right, as you make the transition across. And you're right, these are the people who are going to find it extremely painful.
Yeah.
Cryptocurrencies were also discussed, and the risks there, I understand, are even higher.
So yeah, take Bitcoin, for example. In the past 2 weeks or so since Facebook's Libra was announced, the price of Bitcoin rollercoasted from $10,000 to $18,000, and then it's around $11,000 now. That's enough to give you a heart attack if you're trading that. It's a digital currency that bypasses central banks, meaning there are no regulatory considerations, meaning it might be open to everything from money laundering to terrorism financing. Cryptocurrencies are also on the brighter side, the positive side, a medium of transaction for ICOs. That's sort of like IPOs, but using cryptocurrencies. It can actually help startups raise funds, but then, you know, on the downside, we have all those things that, the risks that go along with it. Anyway, our Securities Commission Malaysia has been in the process of creating a monitoring framework to facilitate the trading of digital assets, and they've come up with a guideline for them. Deputy Finance Minister Dato' Amiruddin Hamzah in Parliament confirms this framework will see the light of day by year's end. So this is Fong's take on this development.
The ICO framework has already been in the works for some time now. In fact, the draft is already publicly available, and SE has already received numerous feedback from the industry. Without going into too much detail, we generally agree with SE's approach to have a third-party host and Web3 ICOs. We believe that it will act as a good conduit to protect investors by ensuring projects are legitimate. One particular area that the industry disagrees with is the fundraising ceiling of RM100 million.
That was Vincent Fong, chief editor of FinTech News Malaysia. Now, on Bursa today, there was some focus on Media Prima. They are in the limelight today. Why?
Media Prima closed unchanged at 48.5 cents. They were in the limelight because UMNO had reportedly sold an 11% stake in Media Prima, leaving it with about 8%. It's unclear whether they are still going to get rid of the rest of the 8%. UMNO, as we all know, they are a little bit strapped for cash. And according to The Edge, that sale was made to Tan Sri Syed Mokhtar Al-Bukhari, who now becomes the third largest shareholder in Media Prima. Tan Sri Syed Mokhtar is also a shareholder in Utusan Melayu as well as the Malaysian Reserve. The off-market deal was transacted at 60 cents per share, and you know it closed at 48.5 cents. So that's sort of like a premium of 24% above the actual share price.
Keith, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.